Hey everybody, I'm Bobby Salveson.
And I'm Michael Monaco, and together we are the Hazmat Guys, connecting the Hazmat community near and far with knowledge, insight, and real-world examples in an effort to make your job just a little bit easier and safer.
Now, let's take a minute to hear from today's sponsors. Hey Mike, let me ask you, have you ever heard about the bar method?
Have not, but it sure sounds like fun. What does it mean?
Well, probably not what you think it stands for, but what they mean is blot, apply, and remove. It's the new way to remember the steps to conduct hybrid decon.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, with the threats continuing to evolve, our SOPs do as well. And First Line Technology introduced us to the BAR method. It's backed by science and real-world application. This method of blot, apply, and remove is faster, safer, and more effective method to decon.
Is it going to work for both wet and dry?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The methodology forces you to consider the who, what, when, and where before determining what materials you will be used to carry out the necessary actions. It helps you to tailor your decon to the threats you're facing.
This could be exactly the thing I need to train my team on. How can I get more info?
Well, First Line's EDS kit has everything you need to conduct the hybrid decon for large or small missions. To learn about the kit and how to apply this BAR method, visit www.firstlinetech.com/EDS. You know, it's time to rethink your level A protection. Multi-threat suits made of lightweight Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric are part of the most functional non-encapsulated level A ensembles that bring an essential modernization to hazmat PPE. Certified NFPA 1994 Class 1 suits with Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric offer unencumbered movement, increased range of motion, improved peripheral visibility, excellent dexterity, and reduced heat stress so you can stay engaged longer. You can learn more at GoreTexProfessional.com. Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody out there in podcast land. Welcome to another episode of the Hazmat Guys. I'm Michael Monaco.
And I'm still sitting here stunned what we just talked about. So I got to let you guys know. We were talking about the new show we're going to be bringing to the circuit for this year. And I was having a little bit of a block about how to do it really cool. And Mike just said a one-liner, and it was like 6 seconds before we go live. And I'm like, oh my God, it's so good.
I'm phenomenal at coming up with great ideas at the most inopportune moments.
Oh, man, that was good. You suck. All right. Anyway, episode 331. Welcome.
Welcome.
Here. I'm wearing my hazmat swag from that shirt locker.
Did you get it from the shirt locker online?
Yeah, actually I did. And they hand delivered it right to me, right from the shirt locker, fresh, right out of the cupboard. So if you want to get your Hazmat One, FDNY Hazmat One swag, go to FDNYHazmatOneTheNumber.com and check out some stuff. They're just adding a whole bunch of stuff and orders are coming in like crazy.
We're going to be having a lot more than just shirts. You'll be able to do challenge coins, hats,
patches,
knickknacks,
and Mr. Plow hats.
Yeah, we're finally getting into the 20 Mr. Plow hats.
Yeah, good stuff. Excellent stuff. Even limited quantity clearance items. Maybe some, you know,
like fishnet shirts.
Pre-worn sweaty shirts. I don't know. This is getting ridiculous. Anyway, the conference circuit.
Yes.
We were just talking about that. We are designing the brand new one, and we have the advanced escape room.
We have the advanced escape room, which will premiere fully at Baltimore because I don't think we're pairing up with, I guess we can probably say it, right? We're pairing up with Argon Electronics,
yes,
who are, in my opinion, one of the most absolute phenomenal training simulations, handheld training simulators that are out there. And we're teaming up. This isn't like a sponsorship thing. They're not, you know, giving us money to push them. We just realized that with their technology and how we want to do the escape room, the two just kind of go hand in hand. So it's a partnership. We're going to be working together. That escape room is going to be absolutely phenomenal. Bob's coming up with some ways of gamification in the educational classroom, which he's got some really, really great ideas, and we're moving forward with that. So lots of things to kind of get us back into the classroom and back on the circuit. And this will be, it'll be 3 years since we've been at Baltimore, 2 years since we've been at Baltimore. For all of you that know, Baltimore is when we kick off our new lectures for the year. So we're excited to premiere everything.
It's going to be great stuff. So with that, with this mishmash of information that's coming through and everything's fresh and new, it's probably time to clear the mailbag a little bit, right? I would think.
Yes. Yeah, it's been a while since we did the mailbag. We've got mailbag questions up the wazoo. We picked out a couple of the good ones.
Yeah.
And as always, some of our mailbag questions aren't mailbag questions. They are questions that the new guys ask us.
I love that stuff.
As they're starting to move through the ranks.
Actually, this week's nugget. I recorded it today. It won't be out for a couple of weeks. It's a new guy technique of testing that I kind of threw out there. So check that one out. I think it's nugget number 32, which will be dropping, I think, right in the beginning of April.
Mm. And as we start to get closer to the summertime, I believe we as a company are going to start to add some new equipment that we'll be able to have runs in and talk about a little bit more, right? We're getting the Hazcat. That'll be up and running. So we'll have some actual experience running it on official experience, not unofficial experience, but official experience. So I'm kind of excited about that. We got a lot of good stuff on the way. So let me take a look at this first question. Where did it go? Here we go. All right. So we talk a lot about radiation. We talk about PPE selection and things along those lines. With radiation, looking back through our episodes when this question came in a couple of months ago, I realized that this isn't something that we actually really talked about. And the question is, at what point in a radiation run or incident can we take off our SCBA? That's kind of an easy question, but a hard question at the same time.
Oh, that is a great question, because this just happened a couple of days ago.
Really? Where?
Yeah. With me. Actually, this question just was lived out. If I had a little heads up. I have a YouTube. Some clown was videotaping us, and there was a question thrown out. But why do you guys not have SCBAs on your back? And I'll give you the quick scenario. Was we had a Troxler gauge,
I did hear about this.
Yeah, somebody is writing in on the live show. Hi, there you go. Hi, it's Stuart from Clemson, South Carolina. He's watching us right now, live. For all you specialists out there, you can watch us live and you get the show early. But enough of that plug. So car was hit like a Toyota Corolla. The back gate opened up. It was like a hatchback kind of thing. And a Troxler gauge, for those of you that know or don't know what a Troxler gauge is, it's basically just it's a ground density meter. Mm-hmm. Right. But it uses a neutron source, a gamma and a neutron source. In this case, it was odd because it actually had two sources in it, which I usually only see them with one. I could be wrong about that.
Well, a neutron source is usually going to be your beryllium and
americium.
Americium.
Americium 241.
Yep.
And your gamma was your cesium-137.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was the spice in there. I was like, I didn't say. But either way, we didn't wear an SCBA. And we were talking about that on the way. Are we wearing an SCBA? I'm like, no. And people were like, what? How could you just, like, matter of fact, we say we're not using SCBA? And it's specifically because of the emissions. I think that's a good word to say.
Well, I think the answer to this gets confusing. It makes sense when we say it. We're going to say it, and you guys are going to be like, oh, okay, that makes total sense.
Makes sense.
But it's because people, we are still in the world where we teach, you know, like, alpha particle, beta particle, we can block it with our SCBA. And people are still under the impression that is it's the actual radiation or the particle itself that we're attempting to keep out of our system.
Yes.
And it's not. It's the source that we're attempting to keep out of our system. So run through your run and why you didn't feel like at that one it required respiratory protection.
All right. Regardless of the intact versus destroyed state of the thing, which it was perfect. Like, you know, I mean, well used, dirty as crap because it was just used on some construction site. I'm sure the ground was muddy. I mean,
I think a Troxel gauge is actually considered a Class B containment vessel.
I think
it has been tested for emergency, like, accident. I'm not going to swear by it, but I'm pretty sure the ground density, right, the packaging that it's in is considered a Class B packaging.
I'm going to find, while we're talking, I'm going to find that YouTube thing and just really quickly bring it up. Because it is actually kind of interesting. I have it right here on my screen, and I'll share it. If YouTube didn't have all these freaking ads on it. I'll share it with you, and you can kind of see what exactly we had here. It happens around 7 minutes. And I'll share. Can I do that? Can I share? Oh, boy. I might bump you out.
All right, bump me out.
Test, do you still hear me? You can still hear me, but I don't think you can hear Mike because I have the wrong picture up. You know, this is stupid. I probably should have tested this out.
That's okay. Whatever.
Yeah, let me. I really should have had this set up. I'm going to switch over to it, and I'll come back to you because I don't think they're going to be able to hear you. Is that you can see, and I'll just describe it verbally, is that you see the Troxel gauge in the back of the truck. And then hazmat one came up to which they were reading the back of the car with a regular Ludlum type thing. But there would be no, I'm going to pause it here because there would be nothing in here. We'll come back when I can bring Mike back in here. But I want to kind of show you a couple of pieces where allegedly a very handsome young man is testing. I'm trying to find where it is testing the, there it is. So what is happening right here is we're using a tape measure to actually get that 1 meter that's prescribed, from the box in a closed state. And you're supposed to be within the TI index. All right. Now I'm going to bring it back to, our scene so we can see Mike and everybody here. And so what happened was, the TI index, which was not on the sticker, we were within the parameters of the placard. Okay.
What was the placard? That was the placard 2, right?
It was a radiation 2, which is the yellow up and white down. And basically what okay. Our whole idea of not wearing an SCBA was that this thing is giving out neutron and gamma, which is energy. It's not giving out alpha beta as a source, right? So everything's still, right. As long as it's within its TI index, there is no source out of the container. And therefore any emissions are not going to stay with me. So I don't have to worry about breathing.
Right. They come, they go, that's it.
Right. That's the key.
And that is the key. That's the key thing, right? We are not worried about the radiation. We are worried about the source, because once the source gets inside of you, it will continue to radiate. If an alpha particle or beta particle gets inside of you, that's it. It's done. It damages your tissue. It does what it does, and then it disappears forever into whatever ether, you know, radiation does. That's not for this show, but it does, and it's the source. So if you ever had a reason to believe that the source was in the air, this is where we start to get into radiological dispersion devices. This is where we start to get into dirty bombs, where we are taking material and we are detonating it, fragmenting it, particleizing it, and getting it into the atmosphere, where now we're actually breathing the source. Now, some key things that you would see, right? If I guarantee you that if the Bob had been walking up to that car and readings weren't acting to the inverse square rule, that would be a red flag that possibly we have radiation, like the sources are all around us. Now, why is that an indication that sources are all around us? Because we have the inverse square rule with gamma, we should be quadrupling our dose every time we half our distance. Yes. Well, if we're moving closer to the source and everything is remaining the same, that indicates to us that the source is actually all around us. And if the source is all around us, then we know it's in the air. Now we fear we have to mask up. But if we don't have that if we have that inverse square rule happening, we can be pretty certain that that source is stationary. It's embedded. It's
right.
It's
we're advancing
in one
on
spot. We're advancing on it. And so that's a clear indication. And that is probably one of the biggest things. Yes, could you have taken an alpha probe and done like a quick little sweep to see if there was any particulates in the trunk or anything along those lines? Yeah, you could have, but that inverse square rule is going to be one of our biggest indications that it's not everywhere. It's pinpointed in one specific location. If you didn't hear yet, we are transitioning to a new format that is going to give you, the listener, even more content.
Yeah, for example, in our technician and specialist levels, we are adding even more video content, access to our entire show catalog, and even access to a monthly small group Q&A session to answer any questions that come up, as well as so much more.
All of this for less than a cup of coffee that you premium snobs like to drink for the entire month of access.
This is the stuff that you've been asking for. So take a look at what we can do to take you to the next level of hazmat.
Go to our website, thehazmatguys.com. You can sign up for our premium tiers that will give you even more hazmat goodness.
Right. It goes with the source. So if I took the box out of the back of the car and moved it over to the sidewalk, I should have no source in the trunk, which
right.
is what they were doing. They were checking the trunk, and it's not that they're just wasting their time. They're like, what do you expect to find? Well, they're there to make sure that we're expecting to find what we expect.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
We're actually making sure that there's nothing that kind of fell out, because the way the whole thing works is when the source pulls back into its keep, the clamshell kind of closes around it. Well, if that thing is kind of open and it takes a good shot, who knows if a piece fell out of that clamshell? I don't know.
Yeah. Even if you were getting high levels of radiation, a mask isn't going to do anything for you, right? Because right. if that, let's say that clamshell was open, which has happened before, right? Troxler gauges, they jam open and you have high levels of radiation coming from the Troxler gauge. We had this incident, like 2 decades ago at a post office. You know, the pig stayed open and the source was exposed. High levels of radiation.
Right.
But there's nothing a mask is going to do for us in that radiation. That gamma wave is going to go right through our mask. It's going to go through us. It's going to interact with our biological tissue, and the damage is going to be done. Wearing a mask does absolutely nothing unless we're looking to make sure the source of the radiation is not inside of us. If you fear the source of the radiation is loose or it's in powder form, right? If you come across a powder on the ground, a broken powder, then yes, let's put our mask on. When you come across solid material and you're not getting contamination in other places, then you have a pretty good idea that that's a point source. It's not moving. The sources are not going to get into our lungs.
That was a good one.
Yeah, I that's that's pretty funny. That was absolutely no.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about specifically that one. I was like, oh, okay.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Money.
All right. Huh. Question number two. You guys have mentioned in your training that you train your new guys to think like officers. How do we go about doing that? That answer is a long-term answer, and it's really no different than how you train your probie to be a firefighter. And that's always how I look at it. And it doesn't necessarily happen in the firehouse. It can't actually happen in the firehouse because it won't really make sense in the firehouse. It happens on scene, and it happens to the point where we turn around and a really good example. We had a CO2 leak in the basement of a Manhattan fried chicken place. I don't remember what it was, but we had the leak and we had our normal captain that was on scene, right? So typically when we have a captain who knows what they're doing, who's been with us for a long time, they can relay the information that they need to know to the chiefs, and they can make the recommendations. And we don't really get involved as firefighters. But it's the perfect opportunity to then ask the people, your new people on scene, okay, we have a covering boss right now. You tell the boss everything that you think is important mm-hmm. that he should be telling the chief, or you bring the chief over and you're like, chief, we're doing officer training. You tell the chief what you think is important. And it's a really good opportunity for the guys to then turn around and pick apart the scene, not just what they're doing, but now take a wide view of the entire scene and say, ah, okay, like I need to look at this from the chief's point of view. What information does he want? What suggestions can we give him? Like, do we have to have all these fire trucks here? Can companies go home? Can we release people? Does special units need, do we need decon? Like all these questions that the chief is going to have, now is your opportunity to turn around and with the aid of an experienced officer, tell that officer what direction you would give a covering boss. If you were a covering boss, what direction would I give you? And then they have the opportunity to give feedback and be like, okay, yeah, I see where you were going with all these. I probably wouldn't give this information, or I probably wouldn't say this, or you forgot about this. And it gives them the opportunity to take a step back from being just an entry team and start to look at the scene as an incident commander and as an officer, so that when you do have somebody who is an incident commander that doesn't really understand hazmat, or maybe your chief of the hazmat branch is new, or your officer is new, you can feel comfortable that you're thinking what they need to know. And that's really the best way to do it. Just like you would train your probie, you know, you go to, we would go to EMS runs, we would go to BI, and we would turn around and we'd go, okay, size up the building. You know, as a firefighter, what information is important to you? What information is not important to you? And this is all stuff that's done, you know, on scene. Take a moment when the situation gets mitigated to really think about not only what you're doing as an entry team, and a backup team, but now what am I doing as the officer? What am I doing as an incident commander? If you were in charge, what types of things would you be doing at scene? Who would you be letting go? What kind of resources do you need? What information would be important to you to make you relax, right? Because that's our entire goal, is to make the incident commander, what do we say, right? We try to make his asshole go from tight to relaxed. Yes. That's our goal, right? We want a nice, relaxed incident commander asshole. That's the goal. So How can we do that? So take the time to practice that on scene. Challenge your people to do that. My air compressor just went off downstairs.
Oh, it's all right. Don't sweat it. It's all good. That's fine. No, just keep going. I would just keep going.
All right. So you got anything from now as a person that has been, I haven't been through a chief's rank. Right, I've been through officers' ranks, but I've never been through chief rank. As somebody who's been through different ranks and chief of a department, how would you look at wanting a firefighter to learn how to be an officer and the information that you would want? Like, that's the perspective that I lack. Is that, I mean, I've been in the incident commander position before, and I've assisted at scene with 1, 2, 3, 4 star chiefs, but what are you looking for as a chief?
I think that kind of guy. I'm going to put on my non-hazmat. If I was a chief that was not hazmat, let's say I'm operations and I did it 30 years ago and I barely remember anything, I would want that guy that is comfortable with hazmat, a guy that is able to translate hazmat. And say, why do I care about things? I understand you're doing that wizard thing down the block, but I don't have to care about it. I just have to support you.
So you not only need to know what to do next, you really need to know why you're doing it.
Yeah, because I'm the guy signing the checks. I'm the guy that if something goes sideways, You can't really hang it on the hazmat, you know, the hazmat guy's neck. It's I said yes to that. Like,
right.
They consult with me and I give the final thumbs up, and therefore, like, what the buck stops with me. And so, listen, assuage my concerns. Tell me, hey, listen, this is why we're doing this. And it's because, okay, no problem. That sounds great. I trust you guys. I trust that you won't steer me wrong, because we're all in this as a team.
Right.
And that's like a two-way thing. And we've talked about this. I remember we did a couple of things of like, hey, the chief or whoever it might be should be stopping by and talking to the manpower prior to the operation. Get to know what these guys are all, what makes them tick, and why they're, you know, I should know when Mike's having an off day. I shouldn't think, well, Mike's just a jerk. I mean, no, because that's the first time you see the guy. Right. You don't know what his good day and his bad day is. So, you know, me, if I was the non-hazmat chief, I just need to know these are my guys. I feel confident in their thing. And if you don't feel confident, then that's not on them. That's on you. That's you have to cultivate that relationship.
And, you know, as if we have a chief officers and regular officers that are hazmat officers listening to this, and ask yourself question, you know, do an assessment of your team. Does my team have the capability of operating without me? The answer should be yes. Like, as a chief, you know, I don't want my chief to feel like they have to do anything, for lack of better words. And I know that sounds really weird, but like, they shouldn't feel like without them, the scene is going to fall apart, because then you as a firefighter, as a hazmat technician, are not, you're not doing your job. And if it's not going to operate with them there, what's going to happen when they're not there? So if, as a chief, you really need to assess your team. And if you don't feel like any single one of your firefighters could take your place, then that's a focus of training that needs to be done. You know, you need to be able to share your point of view and what your expectations of that team are.
I like that. That was a good one.
All right. And question number three actually came from a question from last week. How do we avoid human nature? How do we avoid the human nature of ignoring our instruments during a run? And me and Bob kind of talked about this a little bit after the show. And I kind of feel like turning around and doing the tabletop exercises is a good place to start.
Oh,
how about you?
Yeah, I would concur with that. I think it's repetition and doing things that are not natural. You know, it's funny because, like, when you're in operations, they tell you beware of using your senses, right? They say don't touch, don't smell, don't taste, you know, because there'll be one knucklehead that'll be like, oh, let me just taste this thing, like Butch from Chicago Fire Department that was basically drummed out. You know, we have to tell you that in the beginning. But then as we become more and more seasoned and experienced, we will regularly, you listen to us and we'll regularly tell you, use your senses, because I want to know about, I want to put a little disclaimer there. It's not my senses. I want to use your senses.
Yes.
Right? Right? Because I want the wise man, smart man type operation, where if I can cultivate a smell from a victim or something like that, that is a, that's smart. I don't see a problem with that. But you have to be aware of things that have an odor threshold lower than toxic, or are things toxic before you smell them?
Well,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, and that also, you know, we joke around about not using our senses, but that's an advantage that we would have, not just masking up and walking in.
Right.
Right. Because you talk about odor threshold. Odor threshold, every chemical has a different, what's called an odor threshold, where we can smell it at different concentrations. Right. We can smell mercaptan in the parts per billion. We can smell chlorine in the parts per million, whatever the case may be. But, you know, a lot of times we can smell things before they're toxic. If I'm walking in without my mask on, but my meters are telling me that there's nothing of substantial amount, and now I'm smelling something, that's a clue. That's an indication. That's giving us information, you know, where I'm turning around and I'm saying, okay, whatever this chemical is, it's not coming up on my meter and it has a really low odor threshold. So let's figure out amongst these chemicals that it could be, which one of these has a really low odor threshold.
I like it. Just override your intuition.
Yeah, and practice it. And I think, I think tabletops is a great way to do that.
Yeah, just practicing it. Just you gotta wear it down with a little sandpaper.
Yes.
No premium, right?
No. I think we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel. And don't be afraid to use that like or follow button. Or
you can sign up for even more content from us at thehazmatguys.com. Here, you can subscribe so that we can connect you to even more great stuff. Your support is going to help us improve and build this awesome community even more.
Yeah, and if you want to get to the next level, you won't want to miss our premium content. Our specialist level provides you with access to our entire catalog of shows, which is now over 300, an exclusive Facebook group, premium video with no ads, and so much more. Also, check the Hazmat Guys University link on our website.
And don't forget, we are always interested in hearing about incidences or calls that you have experienced. We may bring you on the show to share that story. Reach us at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
And remember, folks, don't just get on the job, get into the job.